L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Soon our attention will really start to turn to football. There will be a college football game played this week. And for the next, let me make sure I got my math right here, DRS, to start off hour number two. And for the next 23 weeks until January 27th, 2024. That will be a Monday that starts the final week of January into the month of February. Week zero is this Saturday. College football returns to our lives. We are really juiced up for it. National Football League Week 2 preseason reactions throughout this show as well. And of course, Donnie, we're entering the final month and change of a Major League Baseball season. About 35 to 37 games left for all clubs around MLB, with October very much in the sights of teams contending for a playoff position.
We are excited, but how excited can we get for week zero with the boys in studio? Very. That's going to be fun to watch. But answer me this question here. Please. What are we doing in Dublin? Like, what are we at? Like, at least when Notre Dame goes to Dublin, it sort of makes a little bit of sense there because their nickname is the Fighting Irish. Even though I don't even know why they're the Fighting Irish at this point, it's for another day, another time. But why is Florida State and Georgia Tech in Ireland? Like, why? What are we doing there?
I don't know if I have a great reason for you. Week zero has a fascinating history in college football. As Donnie can tell you, the kickoff classic of the 80s and the 90s was a huge deal in CFB. Huge in terms of generating TV revenue. Oftentimes played between two top 25 programs. Oftentimes both teams with national championship aspirations ranked inside the top 10. So it was a huge TV revenue driver in college football. That's not really the case now with these mega contracts that we see that has caused changes to the landscape around all of CFB. And in the polling era, and when magazine writers decided who a national champion was in college football, it wasn't a huge detriment. But then we had the BCS era and only a four-team college football playoff. Now with 12 teams, could it make its way back? That remains to be seen. But week zero slates have been better even in recent times than the one we have in 2024. Only four games that feature an FBS program, but at least it will start in Dublin, the Irish opener. The only thing you ask is two fan bases that can get after it. Florida State, I don't have any doubt, but I think it's a long trip from FSU and Tallahassee. And why would you want to leave Florida at the end of August for Dublin? Well, maybe it's actually like a little bit cooler and not as humid. You just want to see what we saw 2 years ago, Nebraska and Northwestern, the traveling fan base of the Cornhuskers, pretty much emptying out the stadium because the machine stopped working at the concession stands and thus beer was free. What a party it was over in Ireland.
Yeah, I think it was it the honor code as well? Like, hey, look, get as many beers as you want, tally them up, come back later when the machines are working again, and we'll run them through. So I do like the hospitality thing. You know what? We're not going to stop the beer flow because you can't pay. Honor system here, and they probably even made even more money back because people are like, you know what? How many beers did I have? We'd like to over-exaggerate over, like, I had like 9 or 10 when you only had like 4 or 5, and you probably end up paying the 9 or 10 with a nice hefty tip on the back end. So it's nice that football season is here. I just wish, like, you take a look at the NBA or the NFL. They know how to go out in style in the first couple of days the season and opening night. I just wish we get that. And you're right about it. Maybe in the future when things start to open up, it's like, hey, we can afford a loss in game number one. And if we win it, boy, what a head a tailwind we'll get out of that. But I just would like to see it a little bit better. But it's still fun, that football on the TV, even though it is in Dublin with those two states. But by the way, is it like Florida State's like, you know what? We were so bad to end the season last year. We're embarrassed to play in the state of Florida here or down in the ACC. We got to get out of country to try to reset the mojo. Like, maybe that's in – you know what? Then think about that. Maybe that is the plan here. What are we getting out of Florida State? They don't want to stink it up once again in the state of Florida or on the homeland here.
What is Mark Zeno calling in to anger me about Florida State at the end of last year as well in just a moment? A bowl game is not indicative of a team's regular season and championship success, especially in this era. Was Florida State's third string backups bad against Georgia in the Orange Bowl? Yes, they were. Florida State, 11.5-point favorite against a pretty feisty Georgia Tech team under Brent Key to start off the year. We'll talk about week zero a little bit later on. Let's go, DRS, though, to the playoff race around Major League Baseball. Wild card watch in the National League. Again, San Diego and Arizona finally cooling off this weekend. The D-backs were 20-5 since the All-Star break. Entering the weekend, they had won six straight. They were swept in Tampa. The Padres probably thought they were going to continue their winning ways visiting the Rockies this weekend. The Rocks take the rubber match yesterday, though, and win the weekend set against San Diego. Still, despite these two teams cooling down, they're atop the wild card standing. 70-55 for San Diego. Arizona a game back, 69-56. What is really intriguing here is that third and final spot between two divisional mates, a two-game lead for Atlanta over the New York Mets.
And the interesting part about the wild card race in the National League is this. Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves in that order. Even though the Mets are only two games back and the Giants four games back, it just feels like to me, Ben, we are seeing the three playoff teams in the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves.
Yeah.
Two games back, could the Mets overtake the Braves? Of course they can at this point, but it just feels like the Mets just might not be good enough to jump over the Atlanta Braves here, even though the Braves flailing around with injuries here. They do come up with some solid performances from time to time, which includes winning their past two games. And how hot can the Padres and the Diamondbacks be? We talked about this so many times last week. It's great that you're surging up the leaderboard and in that wild card hunt, maybe with a late chance here to take over the Dodgers. But we know how baseball works. You go 20-5 over the next, 20 games, you might go 10-10 or you might go 8-12 there cooling off, because that's just the way it plays out in Major League Baseball with the ebbs and flows. But again, it just feels like to me, Padres, Diamondbacks, and Braves, I think those three teams do make it into the playoffs, leaving the Mets and the Giants just a little bit short here.
I mean, you see the numbers there as well. Atlanta probably has some of the postseason pedigree baked into that number. Yeah. If it was a different team struggling in the second half, despite Atlanta winning its weekend set this weekend as well, it might not be minus 480, close to a 5-1 price with a minus in front, only having a two-game lead for that third and final National League wild card spot. The Mets had an opportunity to sweep the Marlins yesterday. Miami able to scratch one across. But, Donnie, there was a time right around the All-Star break on either end, Pittsburgh playing well, St. Louis playing well, San Francisco starting to surge in the second half. There were 6-7 teams in the running for those three National League wild card spots. It's really just four. San Francisco not out of it, but they're just an even 500, not even a winning record at this moment. And, again, Atlanta minus 480 to earn that playoff spot. I do wonder, Donnie, how your assessment, and really anybody's, but I'll ask you the question, around Major League Baseball changes with no teams pulling away here in the home stretch, right? We talked about it in our most recent segment together. Is anybody going to get to 100 victories in the regular season this year? I still think it's clear to say there are a top tier around MLB. If everybody is flirting around those same numbers, 90, 95 wins entering October, does it change your overall playoff assessment as we look at the National League pennant odds?
No, not necessarily. And also, it might actually help your playoff assessment, because so many times we're taking a look at the unfair advantage that apparently you get from winning a division because you end up getting cooled off waiting for your opponent. If we don't have that, Ben, and everybody's playing right up to the final two, three games of the season, as opposed to taking off the final 2 weeks, you keep that edge strong here, you keep the lights turned on, and you're focused towards winning a championship, you're already in playoff mode. So I actually think we might get a better version of the playoffs this year, particularly from the teams winning the division, because if you're not icing it here, you're still playing quality baseball down the stretch and meaningful baseball on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There are those National League pennant odds that we called for, plus 165 out of L.A. The Phil's still the second-best number, less than a dollar of distinction at plus 240. The Padres have the fourth-best price. Atlanta's always been in third.
Yeah.
The Brewers, despite maybe being the number one seed when all is said and done, still the fifth-best number. More around that MLB playoff outlook next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So the National League wild card race really comes down to one spot, at least as of this moment, between the Braves and the Mets. 37 games, but less than 40 for all teams remaining around Major League Baseball. We looked at the National League wild card chase. We do the same in the AL. Somebody is going to win the American League East between the Yankees and the O's. Currently, both teams tied atop the American League East division standings, both at 73 and 52. Baltimore has the slight edge. They have won 6 of 10 games against their divisional foes. The two teams will play each other in their second-to-last regular season series. The reason I say that, the O's get the credit for being the top team in the American League East right now, despite having the same record as New York. The Yanks well in front, though, in the American League wild card chase. They have a 2.5-game advantage over Minnesota. The Twins win 3 of 4 this weekend over the Rangers, firmly in that second spot, even testing Cleveland, just 2 games back at the top spot in the American League Central. The Royals have won 4 straight. They swept Cincinnati this weekend. Now a 3.5-game lead, DRS, for Kansas City for that third and final American League wild card spot. At the break, it was the Red Sox in that pole position.
Yeah, by the way, shout out the AL Central playing great baseball here. Now, granted, the Guardians kind of interesting last 2 weeks overall, but you take a look at the Twins, who I think have a lot of talent on that team. It's a solid pitching staff. And then the Kansas City Royals playing their best baseball right now. Why? Because they won 4 games in a row to sort of solidify that mark. Now, it is interesting to see the Boston Red Sox. I'm still high on that team. I like the roster. It's a decent pitching staff here and an average bullpen at best. But if you're looking at who's going to make the playoffs, I just told you in the National League, I don't think they're up for grabs, even though the Atlanta Braves only a 2-game lead over the New York Mets. But if you're focused here on the American League wildcard situation, it sort of feels the same right now. And I don't just, well done, they're in the lead by at least 3.5 games. But the Twins, I think, are immensely talented. I think the Kansas City Royals playing great. The only thing you can say, and I guess from past and prior experiences, how good are the Kansas City Royals actually at this point? Now, we're not talking about they only played a month of baseball, Ben, in April and May. It's like, oh, sooner or later they'll fall through. You know, you're through 3 quarters of the season and they're playing good baseball now, 6-4 in the last 10. But again, as you pointed out, 4 games on a win streak. 3.5 games is a lot to jump, even with over a month left to play, because you're anticipating Boston would have to basically be winning 6-7 of every 10 games here while the Royals sort of flounder a little bit. I like what I'm seeing here. So the easy cop-out to say, yes, those top three teams. And the Yankees are going to be in no matter what, same thing with the Orioles. So the real focus is the Twins and the Royals. And I think they're both immensely talented teams. And what are we getting from the Red Sox? What we saw to begin the year or what we saw in the middle of the year? Are they sort of falling back at this point? But if you're just saying, well, the Royals I don't trust because they're usually not a good baseball team, it's not a great wording of it because they've played good for the majority of the season. I could see it being locked in. Yanks, Twins, Royals. That's your wild cards.
And you see it there in the odds, right? Kansas City, 3.5-game lead in the American League wild card chase, -210, greater than a $2 favorite to earn that postseason spot. However, compared to the National League, Atlanta only a 2-game lead over New York, but some of that built-in postseason pedigree with the Braves, -480 to earn a playoff berth. If you are Boston, you are happy to see that the Royals have the second most difficult schedule remaining in Major League Baseball. And maybe you're listening to us right now and you're like, guys, three-game set, three-and-a-half-game lead in the American League wildcard spot. If the Royals get swept and the Red Sox sweep, we're talking about a half game. This could change by the time we talk next week. And you are correct with how random and streaky baseball can be. But 3.5 games, even in 35 to 40 games remaining in this regular season of Major League Baseball, is a substantial margin to make up. To come from behind and overtake a team, you would really have to see the Royals flounder and the Red Sox play some supremely winning baseball in this final 38-game stretch or so. So now let's take what we are seeing in the American League wildcard chase and put it to the American League pennant prices. The Yankees still remain the favorites around the AL. Less than a dollar separates New York and Baltimore, plus 320. Houston, though, Donnie, four-game lead now in the American League West. The Astros, officially the fork has been broken for multiple months now and has been thrown in the garbage. The Astros, who have played in the last seven American League Championship Series, certainly have a good number to get back there. The Astros, a four-game lead in the AL West as Seattle is floundering. The Mariners lost their weekend set to Pittsburgh. Can't happen at this time of year with how much the Buccos have struggled since the All-Star break and really here since August began. Houston's starting to run away with the American League West and thus a very favorable postseason position.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. 9-1 in their last 10 games, now a four-game lead. And if you want to say it's not insurmountable with about a month left to go, just check out the Mariners typically every day at the plate. One or two runs here, not going to get the job done. And Houston does have that pedigree. They have guys that have stepped up in the biggest moments here. But still, I look at that team as not all that impressive. Somebody has to win the American League West. And if you do, you do get home field advantage, at least in round number one, which is going to be indicative of helping you get to round number two. But I'm still looking at the Orioles and the Yankees being the clear cream of the crop. Did you like the Yankees' performance yesterday? Not necessarily. Now in a tie for the Orioles, but I've said this many times and even on the show today, I do like the fact that the Orioles and the Yankees are going to be batting all the way through up to the last week. So nobody's going to take the foot off the gas pedal, set up their rotations, give some players a day off, then expect them to flip on that switch once the playoffs begin. The Guardians, solid team. We know that. They got 72 wins. Fun teams in the Twins and Royals, I get it. The Astros with the playoff pedigree, but still, that AL East is the key to who's going to win the pennant. Whoever wins the AL East gets that home field advantage. That's going to be key here. So I'm still sticking with the New York Yankees there. I think there's a pedigree. It's Orioles, Yankees, and it's everybody else.
So when you look at the National League odds to be that number one seed, the Dodgers remain a favorite at this moment at plus 105. The Phillies only back by 5 cents. The Brewers are also there. Only a game separates all three of those teams, the Phils, the Dodgers, and the Brew Crew. But Milwaukee plus 950. To earn that number one seed in the American League, the Yanks a slight favorite at minus 105. Baltimore plus 170. Large drop off to the Guardians, who are back by a half game right now behind both New York and Baltimore at plus 550. Also, Houston, 11 games above 500. Their best winning percentage so far this season. They've won 10 of their last 11 games. Oh, the Chicago White Sox don't have a playoff price or a pennant price listed anymore. They were eliminated from postseason contenders over the weekend. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The first leg of the FedEx Cup postseason on the PGA Tour this week in Memphis at the St. Jude Championship. It got a little dicey yesterday for Hideki Matsuyama, but he does end as the champion of the first spot in the FedEx Cup playoffs. 17 under par for the week, even though on Sunday, as everybody was starting to go low, Hideki had to birdie the final two holes to hold on for a victory, his 10th PGA Tour win in his career. He takes leg one of the FedEx Cup postseason as we get ready for leg number two this upcoming weekend of the BMW Championship, and it all ends at Eastlake in the Tour Championship in Atlanta.
Yeah, by the way, top 70 were in this round. Top 50 then moved forward. And you know, we're usually looking at the top of the standings, say, hey, a lot of these great golfers play great golf. They're moving on. I flip it down to the bottom of the standings here. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy tied for 68th at plus nines. Rory, I don't think there's any excuses for that. Jordan Spieth's like, hey, look, my wrist is killing me. I'm finally getting the surgery I needed. I'm dipping out of this thing, but still had a terrible week overall. It's crazy. Like, the height of Rory McIlroy's season was like, finally going to be a major winner here, break that streak here, yeah. Coming real close, only to really bottom out here at this FedEx Championship by shooting that plus nine. But if you are looking at the top of the leaderboard, usual suspects are popping up there. Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland, Scottie Scheffler, fun yeah. down the stretch. And Scheffler buried a long birdie, I believe, on the 18th hole to get him at that 14 under, long. 960 grand put in his pocket. But Hideki Matsuyama, who almost lost this lead and this championship, $3.6 million in his pocket with a chance to win even more money the following week. These guys are making some bank.
Really a stacked leaderboard. Again, Xander at 15 under, Victor Hovland, the reigning FedEx Cup champion, who has really struggled in 2024, 15 under par as well, to tie for second. Scottie Scheffler into the top five at 14 under. Sam Burns playing good. Nick Dunlap out of Alabama, who was an amateur, won on the PGA Tour, did what Donnie wants everybody to do and started cashing some tickets as he turned professional there in the top 10 as well. So now we look at the FedEx Cup standings as we get ready to head to Denver for the BMW Championship, which has been the second leg, although I think it's changed courses. I think it used to be in the greater Chicagoland area for a lot of those years. I'm looking for standings. I don't really see them at the moment. Is it under... I don't know. Anyway, as we get ready to continue through the BMW Championship, Scottie Scheffler will be right there. Xander Schauffele will be right there. And do not forget, at Eastlake, it is a staggered start where you will enter the final tournament. If you can make the top 30, I believe it is, relative to where you are in the FedEx Cup standings, you start under par. I believe that is continuing this year in the conclusion of the FedEx Cup playoffs.
It's kind of wild because the money is so great here at the end of the season, but it's almost like it feels odd. Like, we understand the major championships are where you break your bones here. So I should say make your bones, not break your bones. You might break your bones out on the golf course on the municipalities this weekend, but my goodness, man, straight up. But having said, like, we're looking at, like, is this a money well spent objective here? Does anybody ever remember who wins the actual FedEx Championship? No, we remember who wins the majors. So it's interesting as a money grab down the stretch. I don't know if there's a better way to actually set it up, but it's still competitive golf as you're watching. I get it. But as you said, Ben, like, hey, where is this next golf course going to be? Who actually makes it in? Why does this guy start with a stroke advantage? It sort of gets a little like NBA Cup-ish, if you will, at this point. For I know sure. it's a lot of money. The players probably love it. But from a viewing standpoint, it just feels like after the final major, the golf season is over, as opposed to like the Ryder Cup. Yes, you'll get excited for it.
Right.
I don't know. Like, is there a lot of excitement here from golf fans? Like, oh, I wonder who wins this thing overall.
I think it adds some drama, right? You got Keegan Bradley making it into the top 50, the Ryder Cup captain. There was a nice moment where Billy Horschel was the guy to call Keegan and say, hey, don't fly home. You got to go to Denver next week at Castle Pines for the BMW Championship. There is that dramatic feel to it. Scottie Scheffler, who has entered Eastlake and the Tour Championship in that number one spot each of the past 2 years to only not win the FedEx Cup. Rory McIlroy 2 seasons ago. Victor Hovland a year ago, as he has not performed well, even with that staggered start lead, has called it silly. That was his quote entering last week. And if Scottie Scheffler is using the word silly, people that probably have a dirtier tongue would say something a little bit worse than that. So I don't know if the guys on the tour love it as much. It's one of those things, Donnie, where you see oftentimes in sport, you try to incentivize, right? You want the fan reaction and enthusiasm in it to buy in all year long, that everything has that magnitude and significance. But yeah, it's a little bit like the NBA Cup. This has been going on for a while now, over a decade and a half. But we'll see how it continues to play out for the rest of the postseason. More on the Early Line comes your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's preseason, but as we said in our opening hour, that does not mean the reactions are only for the preseason, or maybe we use this time to make sure we are game ready and regular season ready come Monday, September 9th. That will be the first Monday following the first full Sunday slate around the National Football League. DRS, we're going to play a little NFL buy or sell from the weekend that was and forecasting a new campaign in 2024 for the National Football League. I mentioned it briefly. One of the stories out of a 13-game slate on Saturday was not a good performance, a promising performance in Houston, but one that left us scratching our head and oftentimes laughing out loud. That was Daniel Jones in his preseason debut for the New York Giants. One of his first passes of the game was almost a safety. It was taken the other way for a pick six. He threw another interception not all that much later on. Yeah, 138 passing yards, but two INTs and no passing scores. Buy or sell, Donnie. Daniel Jones is the worst starting quarterback in the NFL.
It's not an easy answer because usually be like, oh, well, there should be four or five opportunities where he can be a better quarterback than a lot of guys. And I don't know if that is. So technically I'll sell it because I'm just looking at maybe two quarterback names on here. The Will Levis of the Titans. We're not really too sure what we're going to get out of him this year, but he does have some pretty good compliments around him. I guess the other one would be Jacoby Brissett, who's supposed to be your day one starter in New England. But we're also talking about guys that haven't even like secured that starting job technically at this point. I mean, probably Will Levis is going to get it by default. And Jacoby Brissett, we've been told, is that leader, but who knows how long he'll actually be it. But from a season-long perspective, where you enter week number one and are supposed to be the starter for 17 weeks, not holding that placemat for 3 to 4 weeks before the rookie takes over, it probably is Daniel Jones at that point. Now, you saw the 11 for 18, like, hey, look, he threw for over 100 yards. That's impressive. When technically it's not. Had three terrible decisions with the football. Two wound up being an interception, and one actually got returned for a pick six, one of the worst throws you're going to see from a veteran quarterback. But his mobility was there. He's going to be able to do some things within that offense. But again, the ceiling on Daniel Jones, 15, 16 touchdown passes. It's absurdity that a starting quarterback would have that as sort of his ceiling here. So by default, on the starters you expect to be day one through week 17, week 18 next year, you probably have to buy that he is the worst quarterback. But if it's just about lining up the top 32 quarterbacks, I probably would sell. But again, not from a vantage point where I have like five or six names that I can absolutely go to that I know are going to be worse than Daniel Jones. And he didn't exactly lift everybody's expectations because as soon as those games kicked off, as soon as we got the highlights back in, it was like, oh yeah, look at this pass by Daniel Jones. And nobody's like, wow, that's kind of interesting. No, we all laughed and said, yeah, that's Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, right? You never want to be one of the storylines from a preseason game when you are the presumptive starter because everybody is laughing at you. 26.75 and a hook. That is the passing yards prop for the 2024 season for Daniel Jones, a number he has gone over in three of his five NFL seasons during his career. But that should show you what the odds outlook is for Danny Dimes. Of course, he was paid following 2022, in which the Giants earned a playoff spot. They knocked off Minnesota on the road, Super Wild Card weekend, and Daniel Jones looked pretty darn good. Rookie year under Brian Daboll, a winning record. Things felt at least okay for the New York Giants. Very different feel this year. The Giants, the longest price of the four teams in the NFC East, a win total of only 6.5 in the under, has the hefty, hefty juice. I'm going to sell the notion that Daniel Jones is the worst starting quarterback in the National Football League because, as Donnie mentioned, even with quarterback battles that might be a slight competition at this moment, you would have to go through the list and say that out of 32, Daniel Jones ranks 32. Do we give rookies an advantage over Danny Dimes, who we haven't seen? Is Bo Nix better than Daniel Jones? Is Caleb Williams better than Daniel Jones? I think people in Denver, Chicago, Washington with Jaden Daniels would take their rookie quarterback based on promise alone over Danny Dimes at this moment. But it's tough to say a rookie is better when they haven't recorded a regular season stat at this moment. Is Daniel Jones better than Gardner Minshew? Is Daniel Jones better than Anthony Richardson? Bryce Young? Again, I think those questions are out there. Is Daniel Jones better than Sam Darnold? Now the starter in Minnesota because of the injury to J.J. McCarthy. Maybe even if J.J. McCarthy was fully healthy, I'd give Danny Dimes the edge as of right now against Sam Darnold. Is he bottom five? Okay. Is he bottom 10? For sure. I would say that, which makes this season, Donnie, not about is Daniel Jones a starting quarterback? Is Daniel Jones a good starting quarterback? Does he rank in the top 20, in the top half around the National Football League? It makes this season, for me, a question of what success looks like for the G-men and what it means moving forward. Will Joe Shane, will Brian Daboll be back for their fourth year in the National Football League following year three together?
And here's the crazy part about the question is that we're even asking this question. Just a year and a half ago, whatever it was, they're signing Daniel Jones as their franchise guy to a big money contract. And here we are, him getting on the football field after his first preseason appearance, basically saying to ourselves, is he the worst starting quarterback in the NFL? This is where the jokes write themselves at this point. Like, if we're actually asking this question, why do we have a general manager in place that signed him and we're a coach who actually backed him? Because it wasn't as if it was a new regime, got caught up in a bad contract. Let's play it out this year to see what we have. No, they chose this guy, and we're asking the question, is he worse than Will Levis? Is he worse than Jacoby Brissett? Is he worse than a rookie quarterback who's never played in the NFL? That is straight up insanity, but makes it so much fun to talk about, because nothing that we've seen out of Daniel Jones, and to say like his best season was probably like his rookie year or second year, where at least he was able to throw a decent amount of touchdown passes, how far that regression has gone. And also, it's not as if it's like, hey, you know what? We really took care of Danny Dimes. We got three dynamite wide receivers, a great running back, a fantastic offensive line. This is his chance to shine. He's coming off a knee injury with one rookie wide receiver and absolutely nothing out there to work with. So, yes, he might be the worst quarterback with maybe the worst starting cast outside of New England. Good luck, Daniel Jones.
I wonder what Malik Nabers would answer this burning buy or sell question around the NFL at this moment. Daniel Jones' best year by far was 2022, better than a 67% completion percentage. His best mark in his NFL career, the most passing yards he has ever thrown for, more than 3,200. But only 15 touchdowns. Tom Vecchio will join us in hour number three for his Monday prop perspective. I know he is not too fond of at least Daniel Jones having better production than 16.5, which is his regular season passing touchdown prop. And Donnie is really right. When you look at this offseason, when you look at this preseason, you don't want your takeaway to be after his first preseason game, is he the worst quarterback? Even if you could argue adamantly, no, he is not the worst starting quarterback of all 32 around the NFL, and give us the names that we have floated out there in the conversation. The fact it's even a discussion is a very, very bad sign. DRS, I remember a couple of years ago during 2022, your guy, Brian Rutkowski, used to work here at Sports Grid, a great man in B-Ruts, big fan of the Giants. A lot of his friends at a birthday dinner that Kevin and I were at were trying to debate Kevin and I that Daniel Jones was a top 16, top half starting quarterback in the National Football League. And it's a lot easier to name 16 better guys for Daniel Jones than maybe two or three worse guys, and that's the issue, I think, for this Giants organization.
Yes, and also, it's one of the few instances where you had a quarterback that was going to be set to be a free agent that not a single other team, the other 31 teams, would have even picked up the phone and made a phone call to his agent to have been their starting quarterback and pay them big money. The Giants bid against themselves with a bad football player and overpaid. And I remember the jokes that Kevin and I used to have on the early line when this deal actually went down. The bright spot of this contract wasn't what they paid Daniel Jones. It was that it had an escape hatch after 2 years. When you're signing your franchise guy, and the best thing you could say about the contract is, if he stinks, we can get rid of him. You knew it was bad. Yep. And yes, they will be getting rid of Daniel Jones at the end of the season.
Front-loaded in the first 2 years with all the guarantees, so there is that escape hatch entering 2025. More buy or sell next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
More quarterbacking news and questions around the National Football League live right here on this Monday on the Early Line. In our favorite game, it's NFL buy or sell. Dak Prescott still looking for a new contract at the star. Dak Prescott, who, if he does not sign a contract extension, you would assume in the next few weeks will enter 2024 playing in under contract for his final year in Dallas. Here's what he has done so far for the Cowboys. Took over as the starting QB for Tony Romo during his rookie campaign way back in 2016 and has been the guy in Dallas ever since. But again, entering the final year of a contract extension he signed ahead of 2020's campaign. You see the numbers. Good in the regular season, flashy in terms of the stats. If there are questions about Dak Prescott, it's the playoff resume, just 2-5. But the issues that plague Dallas from a postseason perspective are much longer and deeper than that of Dak Prescott. They go back to 1995, well before Dak's tenure. He has not been the guy to turn it around at the star. I just throw that in there anytime Dak Prescott's playoff resume is brought up. But the question, Donnie, the question here in buy or sell, Dak Prescott will be the Cowboys QB for the next 5 years.
It's a great question, because if the buy or sell was a little bit different, as if Dak Prescott's going to sign a lucrative long-term extension with the Cowboys, I'd absolutely be buying. But 5 years is a long time. Now, he's right in the middle of his prime at 31 years old.
Right.
It's no question that if he re-signs with Dallas, he's going to have a great 5 years. But that's still a long, long runway here for him to complete. If I had to answer the question now, and of course I would buy that, because I do think he's going to get a long-term lucrative deal from the Dallas Cowboys. The one thing we know about Dak Prescott, he's very efficient and very good in the regular season.
Yep.
And that team does have weapons like CeeDee Lamb. If he does get into camp, which he is now, if he is happy with his contract just even for this year, he will have a solid season, which means in the offseason, are the Dallas Cowboys really just going to let Dak Prescott walk and get nothing for him and go draft a rookie quarterback and try again and are all in win now mode here for Jerry Jones to get a Super Bowl? I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they re-sign him to a long-term contract. But again, panning out if he's going to be a Dallas Cowboy when he's 36 years old as opposed to 33, 34, maybe 35, it's a right. little bit easier. But I don't. There's no world for myself where I think Dak Prescott is going to walk next year from the Dallas Cowboys without a new contract. That's not happening here.
Right.
So the simple answer for me is I'm going to buy this because I do think Dak Prescott's going to get a long-term lucrative contract. The condition, though, is will he play 5 full years for the Cowboys? He'll be there at least for the next couple years. 5 might be a slight okay. stretch, but if I had to say it now, I'm buying it.
I would have said, Donnie, 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, buy for sure. I am fully in on Dak Prescott being the future of the Cowboys, at least for the next half decade. I understand what you mean in terms of the age. He turned 31 at the end of July. But I'm really starting to question what the plan is in Dallas. And I'm not entirely sure who has the leverage. I can tell you Jerry Jones thinks he does. There are reports that CeeDee Lamb was offered $33 million per year, would make him the second highest paid receiver in the National Football League, but a full $2 million annually behind Justin Jefferson. And CeeDee Lamb was not all that pleased with that deal. Dak Prescott has not played for Dallas in either of the first two preseason games for the Cowboys. That's not necessarily a surprise. Trey Lance is also not under contract for Dallas entering next season. And that's where I think Jerry Jones is playing a very, very dangerous game. Because as we have said multiple times on this show, your quarterback in Dak, your top wide receiver, and by far now your best offensive piece in CeeDee Lamb, and your head coach Mike McCarthy are very, very close to entering a season in which they will play or coach in the final year of their contract, which would allow them to test the open market. I'm not sure who is bidding for Mike McCarthy, but I know people would bid for CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. Jerry has all the money in the world. As we know, the Cowboys last week were valued at $10.32 billion, the richest sports franchise in the history of the world, the first to ever break through $10 billion. And yet he's playing this dangerous game where in a week from now, in 10 days from now, we are approaching game week around the National Football League without his quarterback and his wide receiver paid and under contract beyond this season. It's very murky waters, I think, at the star.
Yeah, it's almost like playing Russian roulette, and we never could have had to come to this. Let's just say in the offseason,
right.
And I always bring this up, if you say Dak is your future quarterback and you like him where he's at, you know he's going to make a lot of money, but those first couple years when you renegotiate that contract and give the extension, it lowers that cap value, which means you can go out and sign extra players. They didn't do that. So something leads me to believe that Dak Prescott, I do think, is going to be a Cowboy, and I would not be surprised, Ben, if he has that new long-term lucrative deal before game number one this season. But that defeats the whole purpose of what the Dallas Cavs were trying to do. Like, they're always known that if they want to re-sign him, it's going to cost a lot of money. But if you did it in March before the free agency process begins, you can add two or three more players. Redoing him now, giving a lot of money, sure, you know what? He's not going anywhere for 5 years, going to play for the Dallas Cowboys, but you could have been so much more beneficial just a few months earlier. Same thing with CeeDee Lamb, getting those guys re-upped and getting those good vibes entering into the season. But you're right about this. There's a lot of guys on contracts that are unhappy with it, which include your lame duck head coach. Usually it doesn't rise to the occasion. Like, man, played that perfectly. Dak had to prove his money to us. We made it to the NFC Championship game. McCarthy was sensational. He was the coach of the year. We're not getting those vibes. You know, usually it happens. Dak Prescott's unhappy, upset. The team doesn't work out that well. And Mike McCarthy's fired by week number 9 in this season. That's what the Dallas Cowboys are hoping to avoid. I understand the pressurized environment that you like these guys to play and say, hey, put up or shut up. You haven't won for me yet. I'm going to wait until you win before I pay you. There's some substance to that. But Dak Prescott knows if he's average this year, he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the history of the NFL if he's average this year. So why do we wait so long, Ben? Why not trade him before the season starts? And eventually you're going to pay him and you already missed the window on adding more players.
Well said. What is Jerry Jones hoping for? Hey, add on to these Lombardi trophies or you're gone? Nobody has done that. No quarterback, no coach, no wide receiver, no even owner has done that since 1995 for Dallas. I wonder if you selected by the question that Dak Prescott will be the Cowboys QB for the next 5 years, what the deal looks like. We saw Tua get a 4-year deal. We saw Jordan Love get a 4-year deal worth $55 million. Would it be a 5-year extension, a 4-year extension? For how much money? That remains to be seen. Defense next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
NFL buy or sell continues here following preseason week number 2, entering the final week of the preseason. Next Monday, we'll be talking the end of training camp and game week on the horizon around the National Football League. Defense wins championships, or at least hardware, from the Defensive Player of the Year category. An interesting question from our producer, Joe Friezo, but I do enjoy it. Here are the active NFL DPOY members still around the NFL, the National Football League at this moment. Khalil Mack, of course. Stephon Gilmore just signed this weekend by Minnesota. Probably not at his Defensive Player of the Year standard, but still hoping to be a contributor for a Viking secondary that has had some issues with injuries this offseason. TJ Watt, Nick Bosa, and Myles Garrett, the last three winners of the award. So buy or sell, Donnie Wrightside. The Defensive Player of the Year will be a first-time winner. And we asked that question with Micah Parsons, who has not won the award just yet, as the favorite.
I'm going to sell this, but obviously if you're looking at the odds market, you probably should be buying. Why? Michael Parsons hasn't won this yet, and he's the favorite here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, so that does make some sense. But if you're going over some of the leaders in the clubhouse, if you will, Parsons is fantastic. Garrett's great. Watt, Crosby, what do all those guys have in common? They are pass rushers here. That's what leads, right? 15-plus sacks, you're going to be in that market. You can see if all of those guys are healthy for the 18-week season, they're going to be in that range. And if anybody goes out and sets the all time NFL record or approaches it, let's just say gets to 20, they're going to be a shoo-in. So who can actually do that? I love Michael Parsons. That guy wrecks game plans on a week-to-week basis. If you want to downgrade the Dallas Cowboys in that position and say, well, we know he's probably going to be the highest paid defensive player when it's all said and done next season, that means he is going to be in tune, Ben, for an unbelievable season, knows that how many sacks he gets is going to be a direct impact on his bottom line. That helps. But also, do you downgrade it a little bit by saying, the Philadelphia Eagles have a solid offensive line, and they have a mobile quarterback in Jalen Hurts. The Washington Commanders, they have a rookie quarterback, but he's really mobile, which means it's hard to sack. And Daniel Jones, coming off that knee injury, watching him in that performance, maybe doesn't throw the football that great. He still has some legs to get away. I'm not using it saying, well, that's why you can't bet him. We're just looking for some intricacies on why Mike would see the pressing point, which means Micah Parsons going for a contract, which means he's going to be headhunting the entire football game as opposed to the competition that might be able to get away, where if it was a non-mobile quarterback, quarterback, you might get a couple easy sacks. You take a look at Myles Garrett. He's an absolute man child right in the middle of the mix. You know he's going to be up there. Same thing with TJ Watt. So I look, and again, I'm not downgrading Crosby, by the way, but he is a great player. But also, when do you sort of pick up those sacks where you don't have to worry about the run, Ben? Winning games in the fourth quarter up 7 to 14 points, you don't have to worry about anything. How many times are the Vegas Raiders going to be up 14 to 17 points? We might be able to get an extra 3 or 4 sacks throughout the season, just headhunting quarterbacks at the end of a football game. So for my money, I do think Parsons might be the most talented overall technically, but I'm telling you right now, like a healthy Garrett and a healthy TJ Watt, they are pushing 20 sacks this year. So as much as I want to say I'm going to give it to Michael Parsons, maybe I got to sell this and say it looks like we might have a repeat winner of this award, because I just look for unbelievable seasons out of, once again, Garrett and TJ Watt.
And again, I don't think that's a flawed type of thinking. 3 of the 5 best prices are winners of this award previously. TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, who won it a year ago, and Nick Bosa alongside Max Crosby at that 10-to-1 number. I believe Michael Parsons is a justified favorite. I do not think he's going to run away with the award. Like, wow, yeah, for sure it's going to be a first-time winner, because Micah is the guy that is the favored number. Micah Parsons is going to be in contention for the NFL Defensive Player of the Year award. A name that you do not see in the top 10 is Aaron Donald, 3-time winner of the award, of course, retired at the end of this previous season for the LA Rams. So it is intriguing, right? 3 of the 5 best prices have won the award previously, but the rest of the top 10, those 7 next best prices, are not or have not won the award in years past. And Stephon Gilmore, who is now signed by Minnesota, again, adding depth to that secondary, is an anomaly. He won the Defensive Player of the Year award in 2019. He is the only guy in the last decade that did not play defensive line or edge rusher. TJ Watt, technically an outside linebacker, but we all know what he does better than most. So when you look at guys that do not play up front, the shortest price, Kyle Hamilton, the very talented young safety out of Notre Dame, for Baltimore at 30-to-1.
Yeah, what does he have to do outside there, right? You know, 4 or 5 touchdowns, pick sixes at this point, maybe lead the league in interceptions, get close to that interception mark as a record. It's just hard, because the same way we pick MVPs a lot of times in Major League Baseball, Ben, oh, look, that guy hit 64 home runs. That trumps everything here. Same thing with sacks. Sacks trump everything. Yeah. Whoever leads the league in sacks, that's going to be the Defensive Player of the Year.
Hour 3 up next on the Early Line.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.